What are your thoughts on this booming usage of CGI and VFX that we're seeing? Because it's almost, as we were talking about in the beginning, it's almost impossible to find any movie or TV show these days that don't have some use of it.
I hate it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 56th episode of Making It Women in Film. My name is Savita, and I'm a writer, lover of film, and the host of this podcast, which features weekly interviews with women working across the film and TV industry, in front and behind the camera. Now, this week, I got to sit down with no other than Tamina Beg. Now, Tamina, she is an incredible VFX supervisor who's worked on everything from the new Sex and the City reboot and Just Like That to Marvel's The Defenders and Iron Fist, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and also Miracle Workers and Modern Love. In this episode, we talk all about the wild exclusion of women in VFX, especially in positions of power, the upsides and downsides from the booming usage of VFX, as you may have heard a little clip about, and how it's changing the way we make and watch movies forever. Tamina also opens up about moments she's felt like a complete wizard and just really digs into the making of VFX, which is part of basically every movie or TV show you see nowadays. But before I get into that, I just want to say a quick thank you for listening to our show. If you do enjoy it, please subscribe wherever you're listening, give us a 5-star review, and throw up a screenshot of you listening to us on Instagram and tag us at Making It Women in Film. Your support means a lot. Like, I know this may seem trivial, but seriously, just those three things will help us out so much. And if you do post on Instagram, we'll definitely come and say hi, and I'll also give you a shout out in the next week's episode. But I won't hold you back any longer because this interview is truly fascinating and insightful. Enjoy the show. So first off, I just want to go to the beginning before anything else. As a child, were you imaginative, creative? Where did you begin when it comes to this kind of visual art form?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was definitely a very creative person. And it's funny because I'm like the daughter of an engineer. And, you know, like I kind of always had this pressure to do very, very technical work, you know, be an engineer, or computer scientist or something like that. An astronomer, like anything in the sciences. And but no, yeah, I was definitely, as a kid, I was all about the piano and I was all about drawing. I think I was drawing since I could hold a pen or a pencil. And I was always like creating monsters and drawing all sorts of fantasy stuff. I loved building worlds and, like, you know, my favorite movies when I was a little kid were like Neverending Story and Labyrinth. And so those are very cool world building, fantasy type, you know, films. And I just absolutely loved that. When I was little, I also loved watching any sort of animation behind the scenes. Like, you know, back in the day when they did cell animation and they would do those, you know, behind the scenes where it would show like the artists that at Disney, you know, flipping through these things. So I would like make my own little flip books and try and animate. And because I was a creative person at heart, like I was always trying to find ways to do stuff. So I was into photography when I was, you know, old enough to have a camera. It wasn't an SLR by any means. What else? There was a TV show also around age 10 for me on the Discovery Channel called Movie Magic. And that was a show that would document all this behind the scenes stuff. So every episode was like, one episode would be about special effects makeup. And then the next episode would be about pyrotechnics. And then they did episodes on miniatures and all these, you know, things, all these behind the scenes things in film. And that was like one of my favorite shows. I was like, I want to do that. Like, how do I get into the ILM monster shop, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you try to do your own kind of animation when you were still young, or?
Yeah, when I was little, I do it with a sticky notepad.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. Lol. Yeah.
Yeah.
hours just filling out the corners of like a little notebook. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, no, when I was a little kid, I really didn't have any resources for true animation, but you know, that came later in college and all that stuff when I was like, oh, here's Adobe and Combustion and all these other programs for creating stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting. So you're definitely like a visualizer.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just always been like through my childhood all the way up to like age 18 or 19 before I went to college. It was like, I was definitely always getting inspired in different ways. And I think as a teenager, there was a, in the 90s, music videos were really big. And there was a box set of these music videos that were by like Chris Cunningham and Michel Gondry. And it was all, you know, Bjork and, but all these really, really trippy, crazy, cool music videos that were just, they're pretty high end for their time. Those were actually pretty inspirational for me in turning my eye to like a more practical application of being creative.
Yeah. Have you ever worked on any music videos?
I have not. I mean, I've worked on my boyfriend's music videos, but that's, you know, I have a leg up, you know, there.
I think also like, especially like from the 80s, 90s, music videos often had animation as well. Like, I'm just thinking of like Take On Me by Aha. So that was a part of it too.
Yeah, they're just, the cool thing about them is that they're really, really creative. They're just sort of like this 3-minute thing that doesn't have to necessarily fully make sense, but it's, you can really kind of go wild with them, which is what's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now to you, what is visual effects?
To me, visual effects is pretty much anything that we can't shoot for real. That's how I like to describe it to people anyways. It's like, you know, we can't shoot a real dragon, so, you know, visual effects will come and put one in there for you. We can't shoot a floating building, so, you know, either they'll build something that has struts and we have to take them out, or we make a floating building, or, you know, stuff like that. So that's kind of how I like to describe it to people in, you know, layman's terms. It's just anything that's impossible, like physically impossible, is going to come from visual effects. The work we actually do spans, you know, stuff that they could have shot on set, but didn't have time. And, you know, it definitely spans the gamut, anything from making your phone screen have graphics on it to putting a dragon in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The coffee, heat, you know, that kind of smoke, anything like that is nowadays also like so often VFX, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Smoke, fire, water sometimes. I mean, water, if they want it to do something specific, you know, they want a wave to react in a way that it would naturally react, or maybe it needs to form the shape, you know. All sorts of crazy stuff that we do. And it's funny because it's anywhere from, like I said, you know, something minor like a phone screen or cleaning up cables. Sometimes we just end up seeing a lot of equipment in the shop. We just have to, mm-hmm. you know, erase it. Mm-hmm. Doing water simulations and fire simulations and stuff like that.
Yeah. So like definitely a couple of years ago, it was the dragons, but now it's almost anything, isn't it?
It's almost anything. And it's kind of crazy. If you look at VFX breakdowns these days, you'll be like, why did they shoot it? Why didn't they shoot it in the real location? You know, it's like, that's a green screen. Why? What? But usually it's just due to limitations.
That's it's kind of interesting to see how it's changing how films are made in general.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later, because I do want to talk more about that. So you're talking about like animation, Disney animation, stuff like that, but were there some early usage of that kind of traditional VFX that we think about, like the kind of big dragon stuff like that, that piqued your interest?
I guess I could be cheesy and say Lord of the Rings. Jurassic Park. Duh. That was I think I was like 12 or 13 when that came out, and that was definitely like one of the most magical movies that, you know, they really, really made that pretty real. And it's crazy because I haven't watched it in a while, but I'm pretty sure it still holds up.
So your reason to getting into VFX, because I'm sure there are many of them, but if you could summarize like why this was kind of the route you went down, you know, considering that there's so many things within visual art that you could have chosen, why VFX?
Well, I think that I've definitely always loved storytelling. I'm not necessarily like great at writing or anything, but I've always loved storytelling, always loved the aspect of the world building around it. And I feel like visual effects is kind of what falls right into that category. I didn't really have a direct path to VFX. I mean, like I said, I had a background. My dad was an engineer, and my original degree was in computer science, and I was a programmer for a few years, and I bounced around from two different companies before I, inadvertently looked at SVA, School of Visual Arts in New York one day. I just looked at it because I wanted to do some Flash classes. I was working for a web design agency at the time, and I was just looking to learn a little bit of Flash. And then I looked at the programs, the art programs, just for fun. And I saw that there was a computer art program. And I just was like, oh my God, this is what I wanted to do. Where was this when I was 19, or 18? So I got a little bummed, but then I was like, let me just apply. And I applied to SVA, applied to NYU and a couple other schools, and I got in. And so I was just like, well, I should probably do this. So that's kind of how that happened, So I ended up going to NYU for a 2-year program in, it was essentially 3D animation, or rather they called it digital imaging. And when you say, when you start out, you don't really know the difference between animation and visual effects. To you, it's like, well, it's all Pixar and VFX, it's all kind of in the same thing. And then you start getting into it and, the different departments kind of unfold. So when I first went, I didn't know what I wanted to be, but it turned out while I was at NYU that my forte was in 3D, specifically lighting and rendering. It's because I have more of an artistic sort of painterly eye to begin with. So that was just sort of like where my forte was. And then coming out of there, then I freelanced in commercial for a while and then just kind of landed a job on some TV shows doing more of that world building type stuff, matte painting which we can get into. I can get into more details about what matte painting is.
yes, because I'm sure lighting and rendering. I know what lighting and I know what rendering is, but I'm curious to know if there's like a different thing in VFX. Like what does it really entail?
Yeah, I can break that down a little bit. 3D is anything that's straight up, it's not real. It's fully computer generated and it has dimension to it. So, dragons, if we had to render a car and put it in a shot, that's going to be 3D. So lighting and rendering is, you can use it interchangeably, but the lighting and rendering term is sort of the sort of all encompassing phrase to describe the tail end of the 3D pipeline, where you are taking a model that's already been animated and rigged. And a lot of the times you're doing the shading on it and the texturing. I mean, some studios break that up, but like me as a lighting rendering person, I usually end up doing my texturing and my shading, which is basically I'm giving this gray object texture and color. I'm basically making, if it's got to be, a car, then I have to make the car paint look like actual car paint. I need to make it shine like car paint. And then I need to light it in a way that matches the background that I'm going to put it in. So if I'm going to put a car in the street or something, then I need to make sure that it's getting hit and lit by the sun or the clouds, whatever's there, in the same way that the rest of the background is, so that it blends in perfectly with the background. And so I know that sounds a little boring, but
no, it's fascinating.
It's basically what we do to make sure that our 3D objects look as real as possible when we composite it into the actual background shot. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And man, does it look real. Like it's...
Yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And the rendering systems that are out there these days, they're very, very technical. And I think that's where the other part of it comes, the lighting and render, the lighter, 3D lighter will usually be the one, dealing with all of the render settings. And maybe you have a CG soup setting up the lighting settings, but I've in the past been the one to do a lot of that. So, we set up we break it up into all these little different components, and it's, we set up all the settings, which I won't get into. It's also been a while since I've done it. I've been a VFX supervisor for a while now, so it's things are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't take, it only takes like a year of being off the box before it's like, oh, everything's changed. New names for new buttons.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting. Now, the film industry is already like a very male-dominated industry, but when we're then also dealing with computer science, STEM, visual effects, it gets even more so. According to a study from the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative and Women in Animation from November 2021, between 2014 and 2019, of the top 400 grossing movies, women only had 21.6% of all VFX credits, and only 2.9% of VFX supervisors were women.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Only in VFX producing, it was close to an equal balance with 46.7% women. But every other VFX field ranged between 77 to 98% male employment. While there wasn't an exact race breakdown either, it was found that only 0.5% of women of color were present in VFX supervising roles. Now, this might be slightly different in TV, but it sounds like it's not. As your experience as a woman in this industry in VFX, what's that been like?
I mean, it's definitely not been easy. I don't want to say it's been horrible or hard, you know. I've had really, really supportive, like a ton of really great supportive men in my life and males in my career who have been amazing and awesome. And then I've had, you know, not so supportive people. It's a little bit of, you know, it's a mixture of both. I think the hard part, and especially when you're first starting out, is as a female, you tend to get underestimated a lot. You are judged by your appearance. It's often not malicious. Like, you know, usually when I show up to work, they look at me and they say, ah, hair and makeup. And I'm like, no. but I know that's not malicious. You know, that's just sort of a presumption or an assumption that, you know, such is life. I'm not going to get mad about it. But there have been times where it's, you know, you get underestimated and you really, really have to have pretty thick skin to get through it and to let stuff, comments and things slide off your back and just keep going. And I mean, I suppose I could call things out, but I think it's more that, you know, for me, I just really want to be good at my job. You know, and that's the most important thing. So it's like, if the obstacles that I have to overcome include that, you know, like the little extra judgment or the discrimination or whatever it is, for me, it's like, I'm just going to keep going, you know, and I think it's just, yeah, like I said, it's just really a matter of having a little bit of extra thickness on the skin, because you just kind of have to push through it. But I will say, in the last few years, I've noticed a dramatic change in on set and even in the office. I mean, I would actually say in the visual effects side, the visual effects artist side is actually more male dominated than on set. On set is actually pretty good. Maybe not in visual effects supervisors, but in department heads and stuff like that, I just see a lot more females on set than I do in visual effects on the artist side of things. But in all, I guess what I'm saying is that it's generally gotten better in the last like 3 or 4 years, for sure. It's not as noticeable. And I don't know, maybe it's because I just have more confidence now. I mean, you know, could have been me.
Yeah. So where do you see this industry, perhaps specifically this sector of the industry, heading in terms of gender equality? Are there any pressing issues that you think need to be addressed to resolve this? No, that's a big question.
It is a big question. I think what's happening now is what we need to be doing. I mean, I think there have been a lot more initiatives and more of a push in the last few years to put more women in positions of power. I think that's always been an issue, is, you know, it's like maybe there's a ton of female artists, but there's no female directors or female creative directors or VFX supervisors. And it's like, why? You know, there's no reason for that imbalance. So I think just kind of making that effort to include women in higher level positions and, you know, also take the feedback seriously. I do find that, I mean, it's a tough one to talk about because, you know, not everybody is guilty of this, but I do find that, like, you know, sometimes they just don't take you very seriously, you know, and it's hard to, I think the way women are socialized is just a little bit different. And so, you know, it's not just a matter of just including women and like pushing women, but it's also like learning and understanding how women work and, you know, allowing that to be acceptable, you know, not just the standard type A cutthroat, you know, the traditional success story of Americans in America. You know, I just think that traditional success story is changing, and the personality types that have to fit into that is changing. And I just want it to keep going. I think we're doing a pretty good job, and it just has to go a little bit beyond just having token positions. It's got to be, you know, really learning how we work and uplifting women who are good at their jobs, because I know tons of them.
So when did you take on your first leadership role as producer or supervisor?
The first time that I was ever on set was not a leadership role. That was just me kind of apprenticing. And that was, you know, back in 2014. But the first time I took on an on-set supervisor role was back in 2016, I think. And that was for this show called The Defenders. The VFX supervisor, my boss at the time, was John Killshaw. And he was, you know, one of the supportive males in my life who just really kind of put me in a position of power. It's a little scary, but he had me shadow him. And then I took on a large chunk of the show myself for the onset portion of it. It wasn't that, I wouldn't say I was in a leadership position at that point. And I stayed in that type of role for a couple of years before I transitioned over to Molecule, where I was more officially and more in an official capacity leading a team, doing the onset work and the, you know, the department head stuff, as well as leading the team back at the office. You know, I grew into that while I was with Zoic, because I was there, you know, on a lot of shows. And that is, like, being an onset supervisor is still quite, there's some heavy stuff sitting on your shoulders. There's a lot of budgetary stuff, your decisions sitting on you. It's not really something to laugh at. It's like pretty serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So taking on that kind of leadership, that responsibility, having some power, what was that at first like? Because I know, especially a lot of women, we aren't really taught to have that. And it's kind of a struggle to be assertive at first. Did you experience any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And it's funny because I like that we're talking about this, because I don't feel like this part of it is addressed as often as it should be. It's not easy. I think, so just taking a step back for a second, I think that women, or at least I, have a tendency to be more diplomatic. I want to hear everyone's side of the story, and I want to work with people. I don't really want to run people over. It's just not my style. I don't know that all women are like this, and I would hate to make that generalization, but it's a little bit more cutthroat out there than this. So I found it a little bit tough at first, that level of assertive. And you know, the thing is about being on set is sometimes, not all the time, and it's definitely been better in the last few years. Sometimes there are some really, really strong personalities on set, and they want what they want, and they're going to, you know, talk however they need to talk to get you to acquiesce. And sometimes you can't, you know, sometimes if you acquiesce, it's like, you know, that's a huge budget hole that you need to account for. That's your responsibility. You know, if we go $20,000 over budget or, you know, something, I mean, it's, it's all about accountability. And if that falls on your shoulders, like, you have to speak up and say something. So it was not easy. It definitely was absolutely not easy. But over time, you know, you start to see the repercussions, you know, you get the experience and you get the confidence to say, no, this is not how we're going to do it. And, you know, end of story. Because at the end of the day, it's like, as long as you said your piece, you know, you did your job. You're really, really trying to make sure that the project stays on track and stays on the rails.
Mm-hmm. You said that you've recently become more confident as a supervisor now. How do you feel compared to that first time as a floor supervisor?
I definitely feel much more confident now. I mean, you know, again, confidence just comes with experience. You know, it just takes time. It's just not one of those things that you can fake. And I would say, going back to earlier times, and advice wise, I would never tell anybody to fake it until they make it. I just don't think that's the right thing to do. You're going to put your foot in your mouth. You know, the way I handled it back then is I was honest as I could be when I needed to be. And, you know, if I needed to think about something, I knew that I had to tell them I need a second to process this information. And now I just don't really need as much time to process the information because I've experienced it a number of times where it's like, oh, I know how this is going to go. So yeah. And, you know, if there is something that takes a second that I need to think about, I have no problem just saying I need to think about it. End of story. You know, I'm not going to come up with the magic answer on the spot for you just because, you know, I'm scared.
No, that's smart. I think, like, one of the biggest things is being able to say, hey, I don't know everything about this to make a decision yet.
Yeah. And I think when you're starting out, you have to at least at minimum have the confidence to say that. And then later on, the real confidence will come where it's like, oh, I've been there, done that. I know how this is going to go.
But it's a difficult one because you don't want to be seen as someone who doesn't know what they want immediately either.
Exactly. You don't want to be seen as weak. You don't want to be seen as, you know, all those things. I mean, all those negative connotations that come with, you know, just being reasonable. You know, it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, we're just trying to be reasonable.
Now, obviously, you're probably a bit biased on this because, well, it's your job. But what are your thoughts on this booming usage of CGI and VFX that we're seeing? Because it's almost, as we were talking about in the beginning, it's almost impossible to find any movie or TV show these days that don't have some use of it.
I hate it. Okay, I don't hate it, but, you know, it keeps me employed. But I just very much there's so many movies out there right now that are like extreme amounts of VFX and CG, and just, you know, it's just to the point where it's like, where's the movie? You know, I don't want to always get lost in you know, crazy CG camera moves flying through a city following a person on a carpet or a dragon. It's like, I get it, you know, it's a little bit like, when I don't mind watching those movies, but they're a little bit like junk food to me.
That's really interesting. I did not expect that answer, but I'm kind of glad I got it.
I think there are proper uses of VFX. It's just, I am not a huge fan of stuff where visual effects replaces the story, essentially. You know, it's like, you can have so many cool things, but it just doesn't make the story any better, in my opinion, especially because we're so desensitized to it now. It's like, you just can't get away with, oh, that's cool. You know, you can't, like, it's just not enough.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's really interesting because I do like find it sad sometimes to see like the behind the scenes, and it's literally like there is not one single outdoor shot. Everything isn't, and I'm just feel bad for the actor sometimes. I know Ian McKellen, when he filmed The Hobbit, said he was miserable because he filmed in a green room by himself and not with any of the other actors.
If you're in a green room the whole time, it just seems, for me, I just feel like it takes away a lot, probably, from the actors. I mean, I'm not an actor, so I can't really speak for them, but I would imagine it just takes away a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you got to work with? I like visual effects when it's used appropriately to bolster a story. And I love world building, so any visual effects that kind of contributes to that is great.
Hey, it's me, Evita from the future. I just wanted to check in on you. Are you staying hydrated, caffeinated, and most importantly, enjoying the show? If so, why not take a screenshot right now? Slap it up on your Instagram story and tag us at Making It Women of Film. I will personally come thank you and share it on our story. This season, we really want to incorporate you listeners into the show. You're the reason we're still doing this, which is why, from now on, we'll give two random follower shoutouts every episode. All you have to do is follow us on Instagram, tag us in a post, and you might be chosen. We also want to hear from you if you have any feedback. So if you have anything you want to say, anything you want to listen to more, anything you don't want to listen to, any questions you have for our guest or for us, you can email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. Now, good luck and thanks for listening. Now, let's get back into the interview.
All the Mandalorian stuff was nice too. Very, very nice.
Yeah, they used a different kind of, what's that technology called? They didn't use a green screen, but they had like kind of LED kind of thing that they were filming with.
I call it, what's the word? Virtual production is the sort of official term these days. But yeah, they used that. And I mean, I think they might've been the first to use that on such a large scale. And it looked great. That's cool because they did that stuff real time too, I think. According to them. So yeah, it seems pretty interesting. I wish we could all do that.
Yeah, actually kind of on that note, I guess, I'm curious to know like how much budgeting really affects VFX, because I'm sure when we're talking, when people say, oh, that's bad effects, maybe it's not so much about the skill set of the people working on it, but just the money that went into it. Am I right on something there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's the budget and it's the time. A lot of the times on TV, especially, we are on absolutely insane schedules. Usually the schedule is pretty crazy. And a lot of the times on these smaller, like non-VFX shows, shows where the primary focus is not, you know, VFX isn't like a primary element of the story. A lot of the times those shows, they still need VFX and they are going to be quite a bit tighter on the budget. But at the same time, because they're tight on time, they're usually tight on time, not only in product and in post when we're doing visual effects, but they're also tight on time in production. So it's a lot of the time, the time money aspect of it is really a matter of what's going to save us time and money in production and how is it going to affect post. And yeah, I mean, sometimes bad VFX just happens because we didn't have enough time to execute it, didn't have the budget for it, or we were surprised at the last minute when it should have been, you know, done a different way or whatever. But usually it's just for that kind of stuff, that's more of the managing the communication and just kind of making sure that there are no surprises coming down the pipe.
Now with years of experience in this, what's been, has there been anything that you had to do like visual effects focused that was kind of a really hard challenge to actually make happen? Anything you had to animate in that way?
I mean, gosh, we've done so many. Last year we built a CG forest for a TV show for Modern Love, and that was really, really challenging, but it was also a lot of fun. It was one of those things that we had it in advance for a while, but it was just a lot of work, you know. I mean, it was one of these situations where it was shot in a green room basically, so we had to build everything, and that was pretty challenging. Another more recent one that we did that was extremely challenging was we had this apartment that was completely surrounded by green screen for And Just Like That. And that one was a tough one to work with, mainly because, you know, the green screens were kind of moving around. And so we just kind of had to do a lot of roto. It was difficult. And it was also just a huge time crunch. More than anything else, it was a giant time crunch. You know, we just had 20 or 30 shots and we had to turn them around very quickly. So for the amount of work that needed to be done on those, it was hard. It was extremely challenging. I mean, we got through it.
VFX forest, does that mean like all the details of the leaves? Like what? Like
we use 3D. All of the trees in that scene were CG or 3D trees. So somebody had to, you know, we had artists, a team of artists building. Essentially, we have software that can build forests, but first we have to kind of define what all the trees look like. So they'll have a couple, they would not build each tree individually, but they might build a few trees and then kind of duplicate and move them around and until it kind of fills up the background. But there are also some softwares for just straight up using those duplicated trees. And as long as you have enough variation, you can kind of populate an area with trees using certain softwares that basically makes a forest of 3D trees. But yeah, that also includes the leaves. It included the grass blades and the, you know, everything. The ground was the only part that had real stuff on it, and it was mulch. Make that look more like dirt and then extend the mulch out into the CG world. And it was a lot of work.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. But we did it.
You did it. It makes me wonder, like, I don't know, like, is it really cheaper to do it in VFX than to just shoot it in a forest? But
I think the reason we didn't is because the concept at the time was that they wanted it to be more video game like. So we were starting off with this sort of hyper real video game look, but it basically ended up looking like a photoreal, you know, forest. The other thing is too, we were shooting that in the fall, and I think the leaves were almost gone off the trees at that point. So if we had shot it in a real forest, we would have had to do a lot of work anyways to add leaves to the trees or change it in a way that made it palatable. And the thing is, I think, you know, when the concept isn't quite hammered out yet in production, that's when it falls to post, and they would rather put a green screen up and figure it out later.
We'll do it in post. We'll fix it in post. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an accomplishment. It really is. But that's kind of more of that kind of VFX that you don't really realize or aren't really supposed to realize. And then you have your work on like The Defenders, Iron Fist, where it's the traditional VFX people know of. But I'm sure there's also some kind that we don't notice. You said that you were an on-floor supervisor on The Defenders. What does that mean? Because that's not posts.
Yeah, so the on-set supervisor is the not the actual VFX supervisor who would be handling more of the concept and the client communication and then managing the whole thing in post. As an on-set supervisor on The Defenders, I was usually there for anything that needed visual effects, and oftentimes it was stunt related work because there were so many fights. There were so many brawls and fights and just big, you know, they had a big stunt team of like 20 people, and a lot of the times people were on wires. So, you know, somebody would get punched and then they have to fly across the room. Oh, sorry,
your sound's cutting out right now.
So they've got this big wire pull.
If you could just repeat that last thing you said about what you were doing on The Defenders. In a way
that we can easily paint out the wire and not go too much of it, have too much overage in post. So while I didn't, as an on-set supervisor, I didn't have to answer necessarily to the post producer, but my boss did. And I had to answer to my boss. You know, I just had to make sure that we were covered, basically. Making sure that we did the best that we could. And if something came up, you know, we'd either try and figure out a workaround or let the right people mm-hmm. know.
Yeah. So what's been your favorite project to work on? Because you've done like so much different kind of stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I honestly, it sounds silly, but I did actually really enjoy working on a couple comedies. We did Crashing and Friends from College, and I kind of liked working on the comedies because they were so fun and lighthearted and funny to work on. Like the whole set just has such like a lighthearted point of view, and it's just, you know, like, you know, the other shows are like they're really serious and there's guns and there's fights and it's like you got to be careful because, you know, guns and all that stuff. You know, it's just, and it's hard work. A lot of the times it was night work, Whereas the comedies were just sort of, you know, really easygoing. They definitely had VFX, you know, but it wasn't, I know they're not heavy. It's not the fun stuff to talk about, but I don't know. Let me think. I mean, honestly, I really liked working on it just like that. Mostly because I'm a fan of the show to begin with. So that was just kind of cool to, you know, go in there and meet everyone and work with them. That was neat.
Mm-hmm. So were you doing a lot of like on-set things there?
For And Just Like That. It was, again, not a ton of VFX. There were a couple of VFX heavy episodes. Most of the season was cleaning up stuff, you know, just like we have to shoot it this way, but we can't avoid a reflection or a light or something. So a lot of the times it was stuff like that. But in And Just Like That, we did a few set extensions. One was where we put up a blue screen behind a subway station and we completely changed the background because we just couldn't get access to the actual location for whatever reason. And so that was fun. And then another one we did, which I mentioned earlier, we did a whole green screen set extension or, you know, window comp for one of Carrie Bradshaw's apartments, where it's just these floor to ceiling windows with, you know, 180 degree views. So those two were really big. Another thing that we did, which was actually a lot of fun to plan for episode 7, the director really wanted to do a seasonal change shot. So it was sort of like this time-lapse type of shot where we are pushing in continuously, a very slow push into Carrie Bradshaw's window. And as we're doing this very slow 20-foot push, the seasons are changing all around her. So the time of day, the leaves are changing, the leaves are falling, now it's snowing, then it's raining, and then it's spring. That was a lot of fun to shoot and plan. We ended up shooting that with motion control, which is a type of camera that allows you to have repeatable moves. So we basically shot the same thing over and over again with different trees and different lighting and different elements. And then VFX strung it together, but we also added some snow and rain. There were some big things there. And then all the rest of it is, you know, some cleanup.
Now that's interesting. Like when it comes to being on set and stuff like that, do you just tell the actors a bit what it's going to look like? Because I'm sure like you're able to visualize what you're going to create, but for them it might be a bit more difficult to kind of be in that moment. Is there anything there, or does that mostly go to the directors and the writers?
It depends on the show. I think for the actors on And Just Like That specifically, no, I don't think they were particularly interested in VFX at the end, mostly because there weren't a ton of VFX. But actually, no, now that I'm thinking about it, I think episode 6, which was directed by Cynthia Nixon, she actually directed that episode. So she was really interested in seeing, obviously, what the downtown apartment backgrounds were going to look like. But there have been times where I've talked with, you know, actors who are purely just curious. You know, they'll come up to me and say, hey, you know, what's this going to look like? We had to do a scene where some guy gets his heart ripped out. And the actor who was getting his heart ripped out, like I had done some previs, I had done some concept work just to kind of give the director an idea of what it was going to look like. And the actor came over and he's like, so what's it going to look like? And I showed him and he's like, oh, that's so cool. Like, it's gross, but yeah, it's cool. You know, so for them, it's more like, oftentimes they're just curious what it's going to look like. So when you're coordinating, I mean, I don't always have to do this, but yeah, I mean, a lot of the times, like we have to coordinate with the actors to make sure that they're looking in the right direction at whatever it is that we're putting in. They just need to position themselves in a certain way, or, you know, maybe their movement needs to be slightly limited or a little bit specific to get the effect to look right. So yeah, in that regard, yes, I have worked with actors closely. I really do try not to limit what they're going to do. but sometimes you kind of have to get in there and just be like, you know, can we do it this way? Because if we do it this way, then it's going to be a lot easier for us to make it look real. And the minute you say that, they're like, oh yeah, sure. You know, I mean, no, nobody's ever like, you know, I'm not going to do that. Everybody at the end of the day wants a good product.
Has there been a sequence, a scene where when it's done, you're just like, oh my God, I am a wizard. I made this happen.
Oh my goodness. I don't want to toot my own horn.
No, go for it.
I mean, I do feel pretty good about the And Just Like That apartment scenes, because that was like a Herculean effort to get those green screens to look good. But, and the CG forest, because that was like pretty amazing. Another time for Defenders, actually, I built a CG cave with a giant CG dragon skeleton in it. Iron Fist is on the floor and the camera pulls back and back and up and up and up and up and up, and then it pulls through this hole into this giant cave. I built that cave.
You built that. Oh my God. It's so interesting to hear about like those kinds of like big things, because again, we see them and we're just like, sometimes, I mean, it's so realistic nowadays.
It's crazy. Yeah. No, but that cave was a lot of fun. I mean, pretty sure I built the entire thing. I think I had some help as far as like texturing some of the rocks though. But yeah, that was something that I did in 3D. I was still kind of doing 3D work at the time. So that was like a lot of fun, cool stuff.
So how much of that stuff do you do now, the actual kind of 3D work?
I haven't done actual 3D work in 2 years. I can't believe it, 2 years. Yeah, I haven't done 3D work in 2 years. I have been doing a lot more concept work and matte painting, which that's another thing that I did a lot of before as well. It's just that matte painting kind of goes hand in hand with 3D. It doesn't have to, but matte painting is essentially like, I guess the layman's term for matte, or the description for matte painting, would be kind of Photoshop collaging a background, something that's far from camera, not something super close usually. And it's usually something that would go in, you know, you'll see a green screen way in the deep background and a matte painting will be kind of slotted in back there. And like I said, it's usually like a Photoshop collage, if you want to call it that, but you know, really, really, really refined. But if you know 3D, if you're a 3D artist and you have 3D experience, then you can take matte painting a step further to have it be done partially in Photoshop and have those layers in Photoshop, I'm going to use a term here, that be projected onto 3D geometry, so that when the camera moves, your matte painting appears to have some 3D, some dimension. You know, you see parallax. What I mean when I say projected is that you're taking something that you painted in 2D in Photoshop, and you're sort of mapping it onto a 3D object just to give that object a little bit of parallax when there's a camera move. So if you've got 3D, a 3D background, you're usually a little bit, you just have a little more flexibility in what you can use matte paintings for, how you can use matte paintings. I've just been doing a lot more of that. Like I think I did a matte painting for, I actually did all the concept work for the CG Forest I designed. Then I also did the matte painting for it. I did the matte painting for the apartment buildings, and I shot the panorama and then stitched it together. And when I shot the panorama, it was actually cloudy out that day and they needed it to be sunny. So I had to swap out the sky for something sunnier, but still have some clouds in there just to make the sky pretty. And then I had to add sunlight to the photo, which wasn't easy. It's, you know, you just kind of have to hand paint in some directional light onto buildings to make it look like the sun's hitting them. So I still do matte painting and concept work, usually in relation to my project.
Is there any type of effect that you just like, give that to me, I will do that?
I mean, it's usually matte painting and concept work. And the reason I love doing that is because I get to, usually when you're doing the matte painting stuff, it's because it's for an environment, and I love building environments. Because again, it kind of takes it back to that world building thing that I've been saying. It's like, I love being able to kind of like set the tone for the world that the story is taking place in. Like, it's like kind of splitting the difference between full 3D, which can be very technical and very hard sometimes, and 2D. It's fun.
Yeah, no, that's good. Now, reflecting on your years in working in this magical realm of VFX, what's been the most important lesson you've learned?
Oh my goodness.
Another big question.
Yeah, no, it's a big question. I mean, I would say, I definitely would say the most important lesson definitely has to do with having confidence, or I wouldn't say confidence itself is the lesson, but knowing how to project your confidence is definitely a lesson. And knowing how to do that with different people, you know, these are just kind of soft skills that just take time and experience. You know, you just kind of have to like experience certain things over and over again to kind of figure out, okay, what's the best way to approach it this time? Yeah, I mean, and that honestly, that's the hardest part about being a VFX supervisor for me has been managing the personalities and people's expectations. Absolutely. Because the technical stuff, in a sense, is easy. You know, you can always rely on a computer to do the thing that you tell it to do, but people aren't like that. So
is there anything you wish someone would have told you about before you went to this? Like, is there anything you'd want anyone who's aspiring to be a VFX artist to know?
I would tell them that the hours are grueling. The hours are grueling, and the amount of responsibility that you have, it's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility and it's a lot of accountability. So you have to be prepared for the level of accountability. It's not just, you know, you don't just show up. Nobody rolls a red carpet out for you. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of people management, and it's a lot of budgeting. There's a lot that goes into it, and that's not artistic, you know, that's art related or, you know, even creative. So there's a lot to go along with it, but it's also really rewarding because you get to build stuff with people, and it's just cool. It's a lot of fun.
Now it's time for our Women in Film shout out. Tamina, is there a woman in this film industry, film or TV industry, that inspires you that you'd like to give a shout out to?
I mean, I have two people who are actually close friends of mine who also are VFX supervisors. I just don't know that many VFX supervisors who are women in the industry.
Yeah, 2.9%, right?
But yeah, I mean, I'll name them because they're my people. Charlotta Forsman, she's amazing. And she's currently VFX supervising on a show called Brightside. And Leslie Chung, also a VFX supervisor. She has been and is currently on Star Trek.
Ooh.
Been doing that. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. It's they're pretty inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Already inspired just from that. Now, how can people find you, support you, watch your work? Anything you want to plug or promote?
I don't really have anything to plug or promote. I don't know. I guess watch my shows.
Yeah, watch your shows. We'll make sure to, you know, put a list of some of the great things that you've worked on. And thank you so much for coming on and telling us about how the sausage is made. It's been really, really interesting and a good conversation. So thank you, Tamina.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. This was really nice.
Making It Women in Film is hosted by Malin Evita, produced in collaboration with her and Redeeming Features. Our production supervisor is Ruth Aitken. Research is by Lauren San Miguel. Shania Bethune and Abby Weiss are our production assistants. If you enjoy our show, please remember to subscribe and leave a review. You can also support the show by posting about us on your social media and following us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film. If you have any questions or feedback, DM us or email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. For more, visit womeninfilm.co.uk or redeemingfeatures.co.uk. Everything will be linked down in the show notes. Thank you, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode of Making It Women in Film.